This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
What does Colgate mean by live life to the brightest? Could it be a rich glass of red sipped inside a Parisian cafe on a snowy night when my gaze is met by a tall, mysterious... I mean, brushing as directed with Colgate Optic White Pro Series Toothpaste gives you a visibly whiter smile in just 3 days, so you can live life to the brightest and finish that glass without worrying about teeth stains. Colgate Optic White. Find it at all major retailers.
You are listening to iFanboy's Booksplode on Starman Omnibus Volume 2. Welcome back to iFanboys Booksplode. I say back because it's been a little while, but that's not because we don't love you. iFanboys Booksplode is from ifanboy.com, our website, all about comic books. And Booksplodes are the show where we pick a volume of comic. We only pick good ones, so I'm going to say
comic greatness.
And we get together with some of the iFanboys staff, and we talk about that book in detail. I am Josh Flanagan. I'm here with Paul Montgomery.
Hello.
And those dulcet tones you already heard, that's Connor Kilpatrick.
Hello, everyone out there in radio land.
It'd be great if somebody actually found a way to put these on their radio to make it feel all more old-timey.
Podcast land, internet land.
You may remember that way back, I think it was the first Booksplode that we did, we talked about Starman Volume 1 Omnibus.
Correct.
And so we're doing the whole series. So the inevitable question, are you going to finish? You're damn right we are.
We make no guarantees on timeliness.
No, it'll be 2048, but...
Liked the ending when he went into space.
I'll be as old as you guys by the time we're done.
Oh, shut up, son of a bitch.
The healthcare bill will have just kicked in by then.
My Medicaid will be covered.
Yeah. Okay, so let's get started. We're going to talk about the second volume of Starman Omnibus. If you haven't read or listened to the first one or any of these, there's going to be spoilers. So deal with it or go back and listen to the first Omnibus for a lively discussion. I'll call it.
It's a feisty one.
It was. Now Paul, just to recap, Paul was a convert. Didn't think he liked Starman.
Got into
the first Omnibus. Liked Starman.
Yes.
After two tries, right? Yeah. The first try, I didn't like it.
Yeah, it took saying, oh, let's do a show about this for me to really commit to it. And once I got past the first couple of issues, it's sort of like they got into their groove.
And you realized the shade was written right just for you?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Okay, we'll get to that in a second.
And Connor,
close to home.
The first two trade paperbacks too about a decade ago.
Yeah.
And that's all you had ever read.
So. I read those about four times. The Omnibus, the first volume covered all the trades I'd already read, so I'd read those about five or six times. And this is the first time I've ever read anything new beyond the finale issue, the Black Knight issue that came out however long ago. So this is the first new material I've ever read.
So here's where we are in the Starman lore. Basically, now everything's been set up. You know who Jack Knight is. You know his situation with his father. You're starting to get the cast together. And this sort of continues that actually starts introducing more and more characters, which is one of the things that was fun about it. But it really gets into the point where you can start to really explore who these people are and these characters, and because there's not as much grunt work to do. And this is when, for me, it starts to get really very, very satisfying.
Well, it was interesting. I had a thought while I was reading this, in that the first volume is pretty much a straightforward narrative of Jack Knight, who is the new Starman. And we should mention that James Robinson's the writer, and Tony Harris is primarily the artist, though in this volume there's lots of artists for reasons we'll get into in a moment. But the first volume is pretty much, if I recall correctly, just the story of Jack Knight becoming Starman, learning the ropes, accepting himself as Starman. And then this volume sort of slows it way down. In fact, it goes backwards at a lot of points, which was really interesting in that there's not a lot of the forward story in this volume, because they put a lot of the showcase issues in the annuals. And for the most part, those are all flashbacks to the old JSA days, which were awesome. But just in terms of forward momentum, this volume doesn't really jump way ahead like you'd think it would, because there's a lot of issues in it.
Not specifically true in the way that, I mean, it kind of is, but in the way that all of these, it's all one big story.
Sure, it all ties together, but yeah. In terms of actual forward, you're doing a lot of flashbacks, which of course will tie in, but at the same time, you know, there's not a lot of Jack Knight in this.
Mm-hmm. And for first-time readers, it does feel like it's sort of branching out and going on to tangents, but I'm sure that it all comes back together at some point.
Well, you know, as a whole, the whole story is really, it's a story of legacy. It's really the story of Jack and Ted more than anything. And so this is all the stuff that goes around it and exploring sort of what that legacy is. For me, this one actually includes some of my absolute favorite stories. More than anything is the Sandman story.
That's a great arc.
Which is, I mean, it's as good as anything else in the series. I think there's one other story which I really like more than that. But there is basically there's a mystery, and Jack needs help, so he goes in to talk to Wesley Dodds, who was the Sandman in the Golden Age. And out of all of the sort of people from the JSA who were de-aged, Wesley didn't make it. So he's actually very, very old and decrepit, and he has a wife, Diana, who is also an author, who is one of Jack's like idols. He thinks she's a wonderful author, and he goes to see them, and it's kind of awkward. Some of the stuff that I loved about this is it would have been so easy for them to write this story and have Jack or Ted Knight and Wesley Dodds have been friends, and they were good old buddies, but it wasn't like that. It was slightly awkward between them, and I found that sort of change to be a little different, and because of
it
that.
It was cool because one guy had a different impression of the relationship than the other guy did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I like that a lot. You don't usually get that amount of nuance in these things. Yeah. Like one guy thought they were good friends, the other guy was like, we never really hung out.
It's sort of like when you meet one of your dad's old friends or something that you didn't know as a kid, and it's like when you realize that they're people too. And there are complicated relationships, and everybody's not perfect, and everybody didn't just love each other and stuff like that. So it's cool.
This also this storyline won the Eisner for our best arc.
Did it?
Yeah. Well, one thing about this volume that people who have been reading James Robinson's stuff lately, including especially Cry for Justice, which a lot of people read just for his essays, he has an essay in the back of this.
Yeah.
Which was really good, and it talks about that story arc in particular, because it won the Eisner, and B, basically, there was a Vertigo series about Sandman Mystery Theater that I have one volume of. I want to get more of them, and James Robinson's all pissed off because once the story goes to Vertigo, technically it's not in the universe anymore, quote unquote. And this is basically his attempt to say screw that. Mm-hmm. I'm bringing him back into the DC universe. So.
And you have that original art. You have the Guy Davis art from that series. Yep.
Yes. Yep. Oh, is that what that's from? Because I got to that and I was like, oh, Guy Davis.
Guy Davis did, like, I think he did most of them, not all.
For me, like, this really came together, this whole arc. The Sand and Stars arc is the name of it. I think at the end of the very first issue of that, Jack's up on the roof wrestling with some bad guys, and you turn the page to a big page of Wesley Dodds and his gas mask and his liver-spotted bald head. And it's just like, the other thing to be said is that throughout this whole thing is Tony Harris at his apex in the series. He's just, there's some wonderful pages in this. It's definitely an improvement over the last one because he's really starting to feel comfortable with anything. But I mean, like, if you look at this arc and specifically how he draws Wesley Dodds, like, he's kind of stooped and his pants are, you know, his clothes are all kind of too big because he's wasted away a little bit. And it's just a, like, it's one way to draw elderly, which is different than how he drew Ted Knight, you know, who's older, but not as old, and just really good work.
Yeah. Now this is the more, I think we talked about the last time that the art was an old school Tony Harris. And this is more the kind you expect now that you see from his work now. And it's definitely a difference. I like the styles. They're both different styles. I like them both. But basically, anytime he drew a page in this volume, it was really, really good stuff.
Yeah, and you know that whole story arc is such a. It's just basically about like a businessman who's trying to, like, it's an insurance scam.
It's like this fraud, yeah.
It's not like aliens or any of that stuff. It's just sort of bad guys and crooks and henchmen and.
Well, it's very much in the vein of Sandman. He's sort of the noirish. He doesn't wear a costume, and that's why Jack likes him, because he just wears a suit and a gas mask. And a hat and a fedora, and he's got a cool badass gas gun, but a gas gun.
And there's a Zeppelin crash.
And he sports a cane because he's old. But I like everything about this particular arc. It was a fun. It was a real joy to read.
Yeah, I think that's my favorite. Just standalone Jack Knight arc, like straight up adventure story with his character. Whereas the rest of it's sort of like character moments, like where he goes to see the fortune teller and you know, the other tangents with the old JSA stuff. So if you just want to isolate that, that's just a really great Starman story.
Absolutely. And you can kind of just read that, really.
Mm-hmm.
As far as I can tell. One of the other things about this one that I wanted to bring up is I think I mentioned this before, but I love every once in a while, I don't know if it's every 10 issues specifically, but there's the ones where Jack is visited in his dreams by his brother Davey.
Yep.
And this time, like, he brings him on a pirate ship, and they have a one-issue pirate adventure.
It's apparently because Tony Harris is obsessed with pirates.
He is obsessed with pirates, which you would think that shoehorning that into here would not work, but it's not. It is as fun as anything in the series. There's more of these as time goes on, but... this one, he's just like, no, let's play pirate, and then you turn the page and he gets to go see his mom on the island, and it's like touching all at once, and like at this point you know the characters, and like all those moments really can hit home, the emotional moments and stuff like this.
It was also really helpful to me as someone who hasn't looked at Starman since the last time we talked about it, and they sort of recap everything that's happened so far. And he just explains everything that's happened in the last year to his brother. So it's like, oh, that's great. I might be annoyed with all the exposition if I were reading this monthly, but just jumping into another omnibus, it was pretty good.
I think those issues are so good that I feel like I'd get past them.
Hmm.
I think actually when you take this omnibus on balance, I think the Shade is the main character of this omnibus.
I think that was the next thing to get to.
The most stories seem to revolve around him and his. The adventures through time, including way, 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 way in the future.
Mm-hmm. And that's one of the really interesting things when you really start to see Robinson sort of letting his imagination sort of go. Not in a bad way, in a good way.
He unleashes it, really.
Yeah, there's this sort of story that goes on in the future where there's all these kids who are descendants of the knights in some way, and they're like, tell us a story. And so, you know, and just the way that he writes The Shade, like, I could read it for days and days and days. And so, you know, he's building up this legacy of Starmen. And this is the, I forget what this one's name is. Gavin? Prince Gavin is one of them. And I think there's more of those too.
Yeah, and all great different storytelling styles than the regular Jack Knight stuff. Like, that particular one felt like a Jim Starlin kind of space opera.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, it just came out of nowhere. And then, you know, the art style was great. Michael has like a disco Starman adventure knocked me out.
And I would think that that's the kind of story that I wouldn't like.
Yeah.
But it really, like, it worked really well. Mm-hmm. It was a fun one where he meets like one other of his kind, and they're warring sort of people, and they're in this disco and they're dressed ridiculously.
And they're going to fight through dance.
Yep. And they have a mental fight
mentally dance.
At a table doing coke and smoking cigarettes.
Which shockingly got through 10 or 15 years ago, whenever it came through. I'm actually thinking back now, there's a lot of really good story arc. I mean, I love the Sandman arc, but I also really love the arc where Jack and one of the O'Dares, the Crooked One, and the Shade go to hell.
The poster.
Yeah, and my favorite might have been the entire issue might have been the Christmas one shot where Jack's trying desperately to get to the Christmas dinner and he keeps getting waylaid by having to save people and that was a really really good. I love those single one-shot holiday issues, but
and another one, if I could just keep going, there's the epilogue to Sand and Stars. Jack goes in to visit the Mist, who's sort of old and losing his mind and everything, and he finds out, you know, like he was in World War One, and that was the thing he's proud of, and so he goes to do something for him. It's just all these little touches everywhere that are really impressive. I know it sounds like, you know, we're just like, and this was good, and this was good, but that's those are the kind of books we choose to talk about for these.
And it also really it reinforces the James Robinson style, which I think is not everyone's cup of tea, and that is that he really lays the groundwork for a long tapestry.
Yes.
It's just, and if you have to really be invested in it, and he's doing that, he's been doing that in Superman for years, and it's obviously not people's cup of tea because most people don't seem to like it. I do, because I seem to like the style. It's that the stuff he's writing about early on will pay off later on, but you've got to take that long journey with him and go on different directions. And if you're, I don't even know what it was like to read this in issues because, well, actually, you can't even say that because half these issues aren't Starman issues, they're Showcase issues, but. You know, reading it this way, I wasn't annoyed that the story pulled back. I thought it just added more to the world, and that's sort of the way he does it. They don't always go in a straight line, his stories. They meander back. They back up. They double back on themselves. They come back around in the end. They always come together, at least from my experience. But that's the Robinson style to me.
And I think modern readers, and not necessarily their fault, but the way that stories are told now, you know, you have to front load everything. You have to sell it at a trade in six issues. It has to stand on its own.
Yeah,
this is
written for the omnibus.
Yeah, it really is in such a way that, like, you know, right through the last arc of the whole thing, Fathers and Sons. I mean, it's all one big thing, and it comes together, and really, it does take a lot of patience because if you think about it, this one starts with issue 16 or so, maybe 17. You know, that's a year and a half into something, and it doesn't move all that fast. It's very intricately plotted and put together. You know, it takes patience on the part of the reader.
I don't know that it's a grind though, because you know, speaking as someone who was converted with the first omnibus, this was like page after page of just like great surprises. Like, I, you know, there's like the Matt Smith art that I loved from the first omnibus. He came back for a Dr. Fate issue, which is just incredible looking. It was like sort of like. Well, I don't know, it was like Frank Miller and Mike Mignola fused together. And but
one of the things about
just
this
more and more styles.
One of the things about this volume is that there's a great deal of artists on it, and the names stand out very much as you go through it. There are guys who are
J.H. Williams.
J.H. Williams, Chris Sprouse, Steve Yoel, who did The Invisibles. A lot of people know him from. It goes on. I mean, there's tons of names and tons of different styles in this. It's like a comic book lover's comic.
Oh, we didn't even talk about the final issue, which was the Bobo issue, the bank robber who gets supervillain and gets out of jail, and he's a character straight out of Sinatra. Yep. And you can just tell how much Robinson loves writing this guy because his dialogue is straight out of the 60s, mm-hmm. but not like not the hippie 60s, the swinging Rat Pack 60s,
the Parker 60s.
Yeah, the Mad Men 60s, and it's just sort of that was a great time because that didn't go at all the way I thought it would. And then he's, you know, and again, in the Robinson essay in the back of that, he said that was his favorite character.
Oh, and I mean, I'm not giving really anything away here, but like you can tell how much he loves him when he writes it. That character is important. That character's around, you know, it's just like even at the end of this, the 30 issues in, he's still introducing new characters and adding to this world. And, you know, you meet Michael or Mikal or whatever, and you think, well, that's sort of silly. He's blue and has red hair and like, but he matters. And this, you know, this story about Prince Gavin, it's going to matter. You know, it's all tied in. And you look, he's got, you know, the future Shade is talking about stuff. And the Shade's apparently not a bad guy there. So we know that.
Well, it's funny because I've again, only read this far. And this is as far as I've made it in Starman. And I know a little about the end just from being around comics. You know, you can't not know about big stories and how they end.
Yeah.
And it's interesting in that sense to see the seeds being planted way, way, way back. And be impressed by that. Mm-hmm. It's really impressive to read and figure out all the stuff he's doing when you recognize it, and to think, wow, all the way back then. And he was a young writer. He was a relatively new writer at this mm-hmm. point. And to see that he basically had it's sort of a preacher level plan from a guy in his 20s.
Longer, actually.
Right. I mean, in terms of the impressiveness of the whole, of achievement for a guy who was in his 20s writing comics.
To be fair, also, going through this and having read Preacher also, Preacher actually has more asides, I think, that he decided to do in the middle, whereas this all seems more connected.
Like, sure, totally.
Ton of threads to bring in together. Let's go back a little bit, and we were talking about the poster arc.
Mm-hmm.
This is one of the ones that this always feels like a Hellblazer story almost, where there's this guy and he has an enchanted poster, a poster that he got for making a deal with a demon.
It's one of those things that sounds horrible when you explain.
It's awful, and like they put the poster up on the wall, and a curious passerby comes along and is like,
"Look at
this?
That poster! Hey, that's a pretty nice poster. Oh my god!"
The poster then eats him. which supplies the demon owner of the poster with a soul, which then grants immortality to the human owner of the poster. Right. So that's the deal that goes on with this.
It's the Dorian Gray thing.
Yeah. So there's a big fight, and which O'Dare is it? Matt?
The crooked one, the bad cop.
Yeah, the one with the mustache.
Yeah. Who's the 70s O'Dare.
Yeah, who's the reincarnated
Serpico O'Dare.
The reincarnated spirit of Scalp Hunter. Yeah. Again, all of these concepts sound terrible when I say them out loud. And the Shade go in fighting, and then eventually Jack has to go in after them. And then there's this really cool breakdown where all three of those characters end up in their own version of hell. And they've got to, trick and fight their way out of it. In that arc, that's the one with, it's the J.H. Williams art, Tony Harris art.
A lot of people arts, yeah.
And Gary Erskine. Or Erskine, I don't know how to say it exactly. It's a complete, like, the people who are doing that are not the same people who are doing the Bobo story, it seems like.
Yeah.
But yet somehow it all seems to fit together.
It seemed more like a Hellblazer story than I'd say a Hellboy story.
That's what I meant to say.
Yeah. Because the whole trick in the devil and
it's a Constantine story. It is. I bet James Robinson could do a good concept.
It's amazing the different types of stories but they all still feel coherent in the world. I mean, there's the old school JSA stories and the Into Hell story and then the Christmas one shot and then the Bobo story and then the Sandman. They're all almost different styles, but they all work together in the world.
And I think this is the volume that really shows what's coming and shows what this series is really all about. Like, I think maybe you read the first one and you're like, oh, I kind of like this. I think this is really the one that cements you in that, oh, this is something sort of sprawling, something sort of special, something that's a lot of different things. And I wonder, like, how much of it he knew, and how much of it was developed as he went along. Because, I mean, you're starting a new series about a character that most people don't know. He's brand new.
He's got two earrings.
Early to mid-90s when the... I guess when he started this, the industry was doing fine, but halfway through it, not so much. To have the sort of confidence and just sort of like, well, I'm just going to keep plowing through. It's something special.
I think he's sort of benefited from the time period because I don't know that a book like Starman survives these days.
No way in hell.
I don't think this book makes it past 6 or 7 or 8 issues. This book becomes like the power girl of the day, It's a book. It would be a book that a very small audience would be really passionate about, and it would get canceled after however many issues.
Well, I mean, try to think of a modern. I can't think of a modern equivalent to this.
Because nothing's allowed to get this far. I think the good luck he had was that at the time comics were selling so much, there was a lot of spillover. So even the side books were selling a lot, enough to justify their existence. And that's the way the market's changed in the last 20 years.
It almost feels like the closest thing would be like
Scalped.
I was gonna say Bendis on Avengers. It's the only other thing I can think of where he can plan that far ahead and is one guy orchestrating the whole thing. What else is there? I mean, John's on Blackest Night doesn't even seem as expansive as this does because he's got other people doing parts of it, whereas this was all James Robinson, every single solitary bit.
The only comparison I could think of while I was reading it was, since with all the asides and tangents and everything and the different art changes, was something like House of Mystery, but that's not nearly as complex as this in terms of the overarching story.
I didn't think Scalped, because Scalped takes a lot of side turns on minor characters and explores in different directions, but always comes back to the main story. But the main point being,
I see that
this book wouldn't survive now. Mm-hmm. It needed the more popular market where every book was selling a lot. Mm-hmm. That's the downside to the industry now. But Paul, so you took a couple of tries, but you ended up liking the first volume. Did you feel more or less excited in the second volume?
Well, I was really excited about this just because of the nature of those asides, where you get different art changes and different storytelling styles, and each issue was, or each chapter or each arc was something totally different than the one before. And I could see where that could be frustrating to people who want that overarching narrative. But for me, it was just, this is like a really exciting anthology. But it has great connective tissue, so you know that later on it's going to amount to something, you know, greater than the sum of its parts. But I just like I said, when I saw the Matt Smith art on the one page, and then later on when I saw Guy Davis, I'm a big Guy Davis fan, mm-hmm. and I wasn't prepared for that. I wasn't even expecting it. I almost dropped the book. I was so excited to see that. It was just, I love all these artists, and also artists that I didn't know about before. Issue where Starman meets the Mist for the first time. That's the John Watkiss art. It's early on. It looks like a Golden Age sort of comic. It's just really classic looking, and it was just it's something that you don't get to see a lot these days. You know, especially colored like that. So it was just interesting seeing Robinson, who's obviously a great sort of wordsmith, get to play around with the wordiness of the comic, and like you get into the disco thing, and that's like poetry. Yeah. It's like beat poetry almost, or it's flowing and just very interesting, and you don't see that in comics. I love that he goes for narration, not just like character, interior monologues, but like the actual like storyteller narrative of this is Opal City and Jack wouldn't know this, until later, but stuff like that.
Yeah, no, it's a tour de force. It really, it's earned every bit of praise it's ever received over the years.
Yeah. I mean, this is kind of one of those things, like if you go out and you buy this volume, this will be one of the best comic books volumes that you own. There's, mm-hmm. there's no chance that it's not going to be, just in its sheer sort of diversity, but also singularity at the same time, which is odd. I mean, like, this is the kind of thing that, if you were to describe this to me, like where you're talking about people who want to move the story, I hate diversions. I hate anthologies. I hate flashback episodes. I hate the episode of ER when they're off somewhere else. I hate all that stuff. But like in this, it totally works for me. And that's that connective tissue, as you put it, which I like very mm-hmm. much.
I kept waiting for Jack to grow the goatee, and that kept bothering me. It didn't happen until the very end. He's on the cover.
He doesn't look right with a goatee.
It looks. I kind of like that Jack is kind of a weird-looking guy.
Yeah.
At least when Tony Harris draws him. When other people draw him, he looks kind of like a normal superhero-like face. But Tony Harris, he's not like a good-looking guy when Tony Harris draws him. He's just kind of a doofy-looking
dude. Well, Tony does art through photography. Like he finds a model. He does it that way. Yep. So there's a guy out there.
Who looks like him?
I don't know who, but there must be a guy, and he's not Mitchell Hundred. He's this guy.
But I like that he's got like an unusual, distinctive face when Tony Harris draws him. It's not your typical superhero square jawed, steely eyed face. It's just kind of this normal look, normal dude in his 20s.
I think it helps you relate to him more too. He's really like an everyman kind of superhero. Like, and you hear that a lot for other characters, but this here it's really true. It's a guy who is sort of in the huge shadow of all these superheroes from the past, and sometimes he kind of doesn't want to live up to that. Sometimes he does. In his heart, he really does want to be one of those heroes. But it's definitely just some guy thrust into this lifestyle and these powers and abilities. And he doesn't have superpowers, but he has this, the crazy wand and everything. But he has that legacy to live up to.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that's interesting, if you go to the back of this, there's like a little retrospective on some like Starman products that came out. Mm-hmm. And I was looking through it, and I thought, well, again, they're not making this stuff today. That's sort of a lower mid-tier book. I guess. Like, they came out with, like, well, look, a belt buckle, a badge, a pin, a watch. I mean, like, anything they could sell with this guy. And for some reason, all of the figures of him, either the statue or the figure, they all have the goatee, which, again, is not a permanent fixture. So it sounds like around issue 30, they were like, we should put out a lot of stuff.
Well, the goatee is very 90s.
I would totally wear a Starman pin, by the way.
I was thinking you would when I saw that too.
Yeah, I would. That's awesome.
Like, I love, like, the photo covers too.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's such cool stuff. I feel like they don't do stuff like this now. There's no characters like this now. There's nothing like this. It's weird. I mean, like, echoes of this exist. I think that as you read this and you start to get into the JSA stuff, a lot of Geoff Johns's JSA stuff becomes, the origin of it becomes kind of clear, like that. That, like,
well, yeah, well, Robinson went from this to writing JSA, and then he almost immediately handed it off to John. So there's a very strong relationship between this stuff. And I think if you love the JSA stuff that's come in the last 10 years, there's no way you wouldn't love this stuff. Robinson seems to just adore but it's not even in the Silver Age way, but in a Golden Age way. He just adores these old characters, and he in a modern setting, but he still adores the characters themselves. And you can see the reverence he's got for the JSA characters. Even when they don't show up, they're just talked about because they're awesome.
Okay, any other fawning remarks we need to make? Or
did you guys notice a typo at one point that I can't find right now?
I don't remember.
I think I do.
I can't remember what it is either.
It was somebody's name. It was one of the JSA members' names. It was wrong, which was sort of shocking. But
well, you're a stickler.
I can't find it now, so it didn't happen.
They decided to stick with the authenticity of the original work, and they said, hey, if it was wrong then, it's wrong now, damn it. And that makes it right.
Yeah. It was like, I think it was somebody's last name was wrong or something. I don't remember. It's not important. It was one word balloon. What are you going to do?
Okay, so if you want to go check, I don't know if you have, if you don't have this already, but you listened to it, I don't think we really ruined anything. All we did was say stuff was good over and over again.
Yeah,
but why?
Because there's a lot of diversions and stuff, and you're not a lot to ruin.
Well, yeah, and there's also it's not like there was surprises at the end of things. It's character exploration a lot in a way that works.
He has a kid.
Yeah, oh. He does. That's a great. Oh man, that's wonderful. The book is $49.99 and ain't cheap. You can get it a lot cheaper than that somewhere. You can go on Amazon. You can go to In Stock Trades. I think that's in there. It's one of those series that you're going to want to get the whole thing and put it together, and it looks real nice on a shelf. I have
the thing is, even at $49.99, it's a really meaty book.
I mean, it is.
Meaty seems to be our descriptor of the week, but I read this over the weekend, and it took me days mm-hmm. of dedicated reading. Like, I was going to sit down and finish this thing, and it still took me 2 days. You know, I got all my money's worth out of this book. They're very dense stories, and there's a lot of, you know, Robinson's very wordy in these books, so it's not like you can breeze through it. It's a really it's a lot of, you get a lot of value out of these omnibus, omnibuy, omnibuses.
If you want to comment on this show, or you read the book, you liked it, you didn't like it, make sure you go to ifanboy.com.
Tell us your thoughts.
That's right. You can write into contact at ifanboy or send a voicemail to 888-FANBOYS, which is 326-2697. Jeez, I think that's about everything.
I was so happy to get this one off of my stack.
I bet you were. You have two more? You have the next two waiting?
I have 3 and 4, and 4 has got Hellboy and Batman on the cover.
It does. I've forgotten about that.
Which is awesome.
It also has the Captain Marvel storyline, which is not a high point. There's a co-writing thing. It crosses over with another book.
Well, we'll be back soon enough with another book explode, maybe even volume 3, or maybe another book. Maybe a whole other book you've never heard of, a new kind of book. Some other kind of book you've never heard of. Right. Check the space. Yeah. We're going to try to do this more regularly now that we have more time. We're going to try to do a book explode maybe once a month or maybe something like that.
I think we can probably do that.
Yeah.
I would hope.
We're basically working a sweatshop here. It's horrible.
It really is.
They spray me with a hose.
Well,
mist.
Shouldn't have got lippy.
I shouldn't have.
That'll teach you.
All right. We're just flogging here.
Until next time, I'm Connor Kilpatrick.
I am Josh Flanagan.
I am putting the lotion on the skin.
Nice.
Oh.
The hose again. That was Paul Montgomery, one of our excellent staff writers at iFanboy. See that? Thanks very much. We will talk to you later.
I love you all.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ifanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's betterhelp.com/ifanboy.